Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. That was Sleigh Ride, not only to mark the beginnings of the holiday season, but also as I look out the windows high atop Politicus USA's international headquarters, snow is falling. So it's a snowy evening, you're cuddled up here at home with me and George and Sarah, and we're going to bring you the Politicus USA radio show. Tonight's show is about the 1%'s bad day. Obama melds the 99% with progressivism to form a mainstream message. It would be one of our primary topics. The LA City Council strikes back at Citizens United. And we're going to take a look back at Herman Cain, the Koch brother from another mother, and the demise of his presidential campaign. We'll also have the GOP poll update, and we'll talk a little bit about the Defense Authorization Act. So without wasting any more time, let's get right down to business and bring in George. Hi, George.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. It's weird what a difference a week can make, huh?
Quite a difference. A lot has changed, and we're going to get to all that. I hope you're rocking and rolling, and you have your political shoes on, and you're ready to dance a fine number.
Well, I definitely have my shoes on. I'll find out if it's political.
they better be both left, if you know what I mean. Okay, guys, and you know what time it is, George. It's time to bring in a woman whose writing is a holiday gift for every single one of her readers, 365 days a year. She is the progressive spirit of Christmas on an iPad with a keyboard. One of our favorite political writers here, there, anywhere, and everywhere, Sarah Jones. Hi, Sarah.
Good evening. Hi, everybody. I think Fox would take issue with your calling me a Christmas-spirited person. As a liberal, you know, I've been trying to kill Christmas for at least 20 years now.
Yes, but, you know, it is a war.
The holiday spirit. You got to say holiday.
Yeah, the holiday spirit.
Yes,
you have to appear
right
to everyone.
Happy
I'm a terrible, liberal. I said Christmas. I'm buying into their horrible, horrible Christmas message. Holiday.
Yes,
is holiday.
Happy holidays.
Okay, guys, I hope you're ready to go. We only have 30 minutes tonight, which means we should be done in 60. let's get right into the good stuff. Okay, so yesterday Obama gave a speech in Kansas where he not only evoked the themes of Teddy Roosevelt circa 1910, he also talked about the 99%. But most importantly, as I wrote in a piece last night, he didn't just talk about the 99%. He melded it with the progressive message. And he didn't talk about it. In fact, he specifically said this wasn't about 1% versus 99%, but it was about values, and that all these values are American values. So I hope you guys have had a little chance to check out the speech. If you're a 1%er sitting in your 1% home in your 1% town, are you a little worried that the president seems to be broadening the message of the so-called dirty hippies of Occupy Wall Street and turning it into a mainstream values agenda? I'll start with Sarah tonight. Sarah?
If I'm a 1%er, I was already on the phone to Fox News and Luntz and screaming that their spin wasn't working because Occupy has been mainstreamed now, and the president is referencing it. So, yeah, I'm freaking out if I'm a 1%er. And as a 99%er, can I just say, I would love to have video of that freak out.
I think we're going to be seeing a lot. We're going to be seeing a lot of the video of the freak out of the 1%. I think. Let's bump
I look
on
forward
to George.
To it.
George wasn't really sold on the Occupy Wall Street movement so much. So I'm interested to hear what your take is on Obama sort of broadening and melding the message.
Well, I mean, the main thing that I was really saying that, you know, that this really needed some sort of galvanized force to really kind of move it somewhere, because it was, for me, it just seemed like the whole movement was just very stagnant and the message was getting very muddled. Now all of a sudden you have Obama not only bringing light to what they were talking about and everything, but actually breaking it down to a point where it actually can be understood. It actually, in a sense, can be, in a sense, like kind of put on a bumper sticker. You know, like, you know, just what we were saying, you know, what we were saying before, how you know, there are so, you know, so many people out there that, you know, that vote that are only looking for slogans. They're not looking for, you know, they're not looking for solutions. But now all of a sudden, there's a sense of a slogan as solution that's coming out, and it's starting with this speech. I think it's really just a terrific thing, because I mean, like, if you look back at the hippie movement from like the '60s and, you know, and early '70s, you know, like how it was just so, you know, like dismissed by, you know, like by the presidency and everything, and all of a sudden now it's not. It's not that, you know, it's not what Fox News have been trying to pigeonhole Occupy Wall Street as. Now all of a sudden they're a voice that the right people are starting to pay attention to. And that's where, you know, things are really going to start opening up, because now all of a sudden it's become their own little mission accomplished. Because now all of a sudden they've broken through. They've gotten into the right ear.
You did not just say mission accomplished.
Well, you know, like in a sense, because, you know, like, you know, just like this, it's going to take another 8 years for the, you know, for it to actually come to fruition. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, now we start, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's just like, that's the beginning of it. And in a sense, like, that's kind of a way that I, that's the only way that I can, in my own head, rationalize the whole mission accomplished crap that we have to see in 2003. It was just like, now it begins. It's like, mission accomplished. We got to Iraq. Now we're going to, you know, now it begins. So now it's just going to be like, mission accomplished. Obama hears you. Now we're going to see what he's going to do with that message. But now it's in his ear. So now we're going to find out what's going
to
happen.
Okay,
Sarah,
do you think the marriage between the 99% message and progressivism and the left, does that work? Is that a suitable marriage, or is that somewhat of a corrupting of one or the other? Or, you know, is it something different? Is it not the 99%, but not progressivism, but a different message altogether? Is it a third entity?
I think so. I would hate to see the message get co-opted by a party, although, as I say, you know, all the time in my articles on it, it obviously the agenda is very similar to the Democratic platform, but I would hate to see Occupy Wall Street get co-opted by either party, certainly not the Republican Party, which stands for pretty much the opposite of what the folks in OWS stand for. But I still don't want to see them getting into bed with the Democratic Party, because for a lot of reasons, but I number one, think that that invites a bastardization of the message and a watering down of the message. And it invites opportunity for people with agendas to take over. And I don't want to see that. This is a movement of the people, and it needs to stay that way. Even though, you know, George made an excellent point, and other people have made the point about needing some leadership, and it does need that. I think it's great that the president spoke about these issues. And I do want to veer off on that for a second. Jason, I'm going to put you on the spot for 1 minute. I know you're so pleased. But, you know, you wrote this article saying this is the Obama came out and was talking about these issues for the first time. And I knew exactly what you meant, but I have a lot of really engaged readers and friends on my Facebook page, and a lot of them were writing in and saying this isn't Obama's first time talking about these issues. And, of course, when you look back at his speeches and read his books, he's been talking about these issues, and he stood for economic equality since, you know, I found one from 2005. You know, it's like
there's a critical distinction.
Right, and I would love you to explain that.
The critical distinction is, it's not that Obama hasn't talked about the broader issues. It's that this specific movement, he's using the language of this specific movement, which he's never done before. I've written about every major Obama speech of the Obama presidency, and he's never spoken about it in this way. It's not about Obama finally speaks about these things. It is about the way the president is addressing these to try to connect with a larger movement. And the adoption of the movement, the adoption of the movement into the president's broader message. It's about a consensus that is being built in this country.
And it seems to me like, you know, he was waiting all this time for, you know, yes, we can, and yes, I can, it's yes, we can. But he needed political covering. He needed the backing of the people. And as he let these, you know, he let the movement be out there for a long time by itself before he really addressed it directly, certainly like he did in this speech, as you pointed out. And I'm glad he did it that way because, again, had he stepped in a lot sooner, it would have been seen as a partisan issue. But instead, I think he did a great job of making it an issue of American values. And it is an American value to have economic opportunity for everyone.
The interesting thing about the article I wrote is that it's a matter of perspective. This wasn't an article about Obama does blank. This is an article about how unaffiliated grassroots movement breaks through, as George put it, and becomes adopted slowly into the public policy process. The president is the highest decision maker in the country. When the president starts using the language of your movement, you have become mainstream. You are now a vital part of the political discourse. And that was the point of this article. It wasn't about what Obama said in 2003 or when he was in the state senate or when he was a senator. It's about what is going on in this moment right now and how these two forces are somewhat merging together into a larger message.
It's really exciting. I mean, this is exactly what I wanted to see happen with this movement. And it's global, and it's really exciting.
Well, this is what has to happen with every outside grassroots movement, outside of a political structure. If an outside grassroots movement does not become adopted into the discussion, dialogue, and discourse in the country by a political party, it dies. There's no next step. As George was saying, what's going to happen next? But what has to happen next is someone in the policymaking process and in the people who set the agenda for our political dialogue, those people have to start talking about it. And that's what's happening with Occupy Wall Street. And it's tremendous. And anyone who thinks that this is just about, wants to quibble about what Obama said, how, when, is missing the larger overall point. This is a pretty historic, that speech yesterday was historic in a lot of ways. And not just for the references to Teddy Roosevelt. Okay, staying on Occupy Wall Street, we're going to just toss it over to Sarah for a second, because she wrote a story today about the LA City Council passes a resolution to call for an end to corporate personhood. Tell us a little bit about how this is a Citizens United, this is an anti-Citizens United movement. Tell us a little bit about your story and what's behind it and maybe where it goes from here, Sarah.
Well, it does tie into Occupy Wall Street. The Move to Amend is the coalition behind this, and it's a grassroots coalition. They are going to target cities and bring this up for a measure, a call to overturn Citizens United, basically. And they did this in Los Angeles on yesterday, and it passed unanimously. There was a lot of energy and enthusiasm for this, and the video of their press conference is not only just great news, but it's really fun to watch because of all the energy involved. And Occupy Los Angeles also backed this measure. So they're hoping that people around the country will begin to do this and push on a local level to get this issue up, to make a call to overturn Citizens United. And interestingly, the fellow who backed this at the city council is in charge of mayors and city council, Democratic mayors and city councils across the country, and he made a pledge to bring this amendment to all of those folks. Once again, but you're kind of seeing this relationship between Democrats and OWS, and I do think that's appropriate. Again, it's the platform is very similar, but, you know, there's a difference, and it's a fine distinction between saying we Democrats are going to adopt this idea versus this idea is a Democratic idea. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, yes, Occupy Wall Street shares a lot of Democratic ideas about the country and the way it should operate. regulations and all of that, you know, the corporate money out of politics. But it's different to say Democrats or OWS is aligned with Democrats. Much better to see Democrats adopting, like you said, you know, seeing them start to bring legislation forward based on this. So
yeah, now I think that's a really good point. George, when we're talking about Citizens United, you know how hard it's going to be to overturn the Supreme Court decision. So is
sure.
this movement to do this at, like, maybe the city and state level, is this the way to go for the, if you want to get rid of Citizens United, if you want to say corporations aren't people in my city, state, town?
I think that this is the best possible way to do it, because not only are you basically just kind of chipping away at Citizens United, but you're basically beating the GOP at its own game, because the GOP basically stands for the real GOP. I don't know what the hell this version of it, you know, really stands for, but the true version of the GOP stands for smaller government, states' rights. So you're basically saying, all right, well, state by state, we're saying that this law is crap. You know, so this is a terrific way to kind of send that message. And there's really, I mean, honestly, there's really nothing that they can do about it to, you know, to try to cancel this out, because what they're doing is, you know, like by putting this law through the Supreme Court and everything, they're making like a big government decision, which is so not what the part of the Republican Party is supposed to be about. But the way that it's being countered is exactly the way it should be. I think this is just a terrific way to handle it.
George, are you saying that the Supreme Court, as it's currently constructed, is made up of several conservative activist justices who are making the law from the bench?
See, I'm not going to say that because this is going out live.
I am
on the cell phone. So,
I'll say it.
I'm gonna. They know where to find me. I will say it. I do. I think first of all, what the Supreme Court did was they basically took the power away from Congress to regulate and protect the electoral process, and I can't see how that's constitutional. This is an outrage to me, and I think that remember when the Disclose Act was brought forward and failed in the Senate, and you saw Republicans filibustering that. And once again, you know, people talk about who donates to what campaign and what that says about who's bought off. But in reality, it doesn't matter if Democrats got $8 million from the Koch brothers. It matters how they vote, and it matters what they do. To me, it matters how they vote and what kind of legislation they bring forward and what they stand for, because you're not bought off until you fail to serve the people because someone gave you money. So I'm still outraged about the Disclose Act. And I think it says, and once again, it says how Republicans don't want to support the rights of the people and power of the people. And that should say a lot more than who gives money to whom. Why do they want to cover up who's donating money to campaigns? Why doesn't anyone ask them that?
I think we know that they'll keep getting away with that. The dirty money will keep coming in until the American people wake up and realize this is a problem and they demand change. As long as people keep sitting there and going with the flow and just acknowledging and shrugging it off that all politics is dirty, this is never going to change. But now we have to move on to the saddest part of our whole show tonight. Everybody, bow your heads for a moment. It's time to pay our respects to the 2012 presidential campaign of Herman Cain. Mr. 999 suspended his campaign over a few paltry one little mistress for 13 years. I mean, come on. I mean, no, not understanding foreign policy. I mean, there was just so many, as Herman would say, as he did one of the most classless things I've ever seen in my life, as he attacked the women that he likely sexually harassed in his own departure speech and blamed the media. Herman Cain, never responsible for anything. It's not his fault his campaign ended. And the most intriguing line of his whole Saturday speech was that he's a fighter, but he's not going to fight these, as he called them, quote, false allegations against his campaign. And now, anybody who's ever been falsely accused of anything, I have never known them to say, well, I didn't do it, but I'm going to quit anyway. So, would you guys like to take a moment each and eulogize Herman Cain, George?
Just to kind of reiterate a point that I made last week, how the GOP primaries are becoming like the tagline for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, who will survive and what will be left of them. This happens to fall right into my analogy regarding horror movies because the black guy goes first. So.
That's brutal.
Okay. Sarah?
Brutal but true. In the Republican Party, the black guy is a woman. Just like in horror shows, have to go first.
Yep.
Sarah, please give us some final thoughts on Herman Cain.
Before we say goodbye to him for
2012.
The way you guys are picking on him, you know God chose him, and you don't know what's in God's heart. And God has forgiven him for all of these sexual harassment and long-term affairs. So for you to question the Herman Cain really makes me wonder about your relationship with God.
Here goes
a quitter who is not a quitter. That's how I would eulogize him. A clown who pushed his luck too far and a grifter who got busted.
Yeah, that really does sum up all the elements of Herman Cain. Do you guys think Herman Cain has any kind of future? Is he going to have his own show on Fox by this time next month, next year?
It's going to be a little bit, I think, just because of the allegations that basically ended his campaign. I believe he is going to take some time away from the spotlight. He does, I'm sure he wants to patch up any problems with his family. More power to him for doing that. And, at the same time, though, Fox will wave a paycheck in front of him, and he will take it. Because, any candidate who doesn't succeed, they're a perfect candidate to have their own show, with Fox. I can see him taking some time off, maybe, I would say about 6 months. Take 6 months, have an extended vacation, do whatever he needs to do with his family, make sure everyone is hunky-dory. As soon as everything is forgiven, grab that paycheck and run.
Okay, Sarah, my question for you is Herman Cain to fit into Georgia's timeline? Is Sarah Palin's contract expires after the 2012 election. Does Herman Cain take Sarah Palin's job at Fox?
He very well could. That's a great question because you look at both of them. When she quit, she said she wasn't quitting. He did the same exact thing. I've been saying this since he came on the scene. It's like he's taking pages out of her book. He's just following everything she set up. Everything is the media's fault. God loves me best. And the devil is after me. And, all those caniacs went nuts when Ginger White came forward. And, boy, they accused her basically of being the devil. Well, they came right out and said it. And he's definitely following in Sarah Palin's footsteps. It would be fun to see him get a contract at Fox, which brings us to the question, how far can Fox take this farce? Because, right, it already seems like they've really hurt the Republican Party. For years, they've been propagandizing and pushing the narrative in our country to the right with their lies. But now it's all starting to come back on the party. And you look at the candidates they have with Newt Gingrich leading, and it's obvious that Fox is not a good influence on the party, as if they could be a good influence on anyone. But I just wonder how far they're going to keep pushing things. I mean, could you get any lower than Herman Cain? We thought it couldn't get any worse after Sarah Palin. But now they're behind Newt Gingrich. I don't know. I'm sitting here, and look how embarrassing this is internationally. It's so humiliating.
You wrote a story about that this week on Politicus USA.
I
encourage everyone to run on over to the website and read right now, if they
haven't
already.
I would like people to read that as well. I was talking about how our media has let us down, and that you read something in the foreign press that, you know, they're not pulling any punches. They're not pretending that denying climate change based on a religion is a valid position and worth debating, equally worth in merit to scientific evidence. You know, our media basically presents these ideas as equal, and that's just one example of the way they've done this, but they've let us down, tremendously let us down, and now, you know, they're just starting to fact-check the Republicans now, and it seems like, they're really proud of themselves for it. I would really like to see, if they were being honest, they would come out and say, this is a clown show, a farce, and an insult to every American in this country who can think. And I'm not talking about Republican ideas being a joke. I'm talking about these particular candidates and the sort of things that they claim to be behind and the ideas they, quote-unquote ideas they have for the country.
George,
it is a joke.
This is, Sarah just brought up a fantastic point. Is the media, are candidates like the Republican candidates we have today, is part of the responsibility to go to the media for not checking these guys out? Has the media let us down?
I honestly think that that a lot of blame does have to fall on the media, because once they kind of get their narrative, then they're just running with it. And it's really just, you know, kind of weak, you know, the way that the mainstream media has been going. And a big part of it is how they just, similar to what I was saying last week, how they just roll over and take it like the very moment that Fox News cries liberal bias. And it's just amazing. Like, you know, it's basically, you know, people, you know, Fox News has that whole slogan, like the most powerful name in news. And the reason why is because they found out a way to manipulate the news into basically saying anything that they want. So if, you know, they're basically saying Ron Paul is irrelevant, therefore the mainstream media, Ron Paul is irrelevant. You know, it's just like they, and it's just sickening the way that the media has just fallen, because they used to not be like this. They used to have a set, and they don't have it anymore. And it's a real shame.
Where are the components of the media? Yes.
George is starting to sound more and more like Sarah Palin every week.
No, he is not. He could never sound like Sarah Palin. George is more brilliant in his toe.
If he starts telling the Republicans to put on their man pants, like Christine O'Donnell, we're going to have a talk.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on, gang. Moving on, gang. This is one of our favorite parts of the show. I know you guys love it. I love it, too. It's time for the weekly rundown of who's winning the GOP race this week. It is our update between the Mormon, the adulterer, well, the sexual harasser's gone. We have the libertarian, we have the senator from God, and the congresswoman who thinks she is God. Four new polls out today, all from CNN Times, of Florida, New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina. In three of the four polls, your leader is the adulterer. And the adulterer isn't just leading by a little bit. He's leading by a lot in three of the four. Perhaps the most interesting data in these polls isn't Gingrich's lead, but just who he's leading with and by how much. Gingrich is crushing Mitt Romney in Florida right now by a margin of 48% to 25%. He leads among men in the mucho macho Republican Party. The white male vote, as we know, makes up a lot of the GOP. He leads among men in the Sunshine State 56 to 20. He leads with the white folk, because we all know there aren't too many other kind of folk in the GOP, 48 to 25. He leads with the born-agains by a large margin over Mitt Romney. And the same scenario plays out in South Carolina. He's up 43-20 on Mitt Romney, and nobody else is really even close in any of these states. The most interesting thing is in Iowa, he's up, maybe not by such a huge amount, but he's up 33-20 in Iowa. I mean, these are large margins he's pulling up, double-digit margins that are way beyond the margin of error. So these are solid leads. In New Hampshire, Mitt Romney leads only 35-26. Remember, he was the governor of a neighboring state. In South Carolina, 43-20, which I believe I talked about, and I believe that was all four of them. These numbers are really, it's really starting to look like the adulterer could be the nominee. Any thoughts on this, you guys? George? Did it surprise you at all?
I am a little bit. I'm actually thinking that the GOP has in their possession like a countrywide neuralizer from Men in Black to kind of basically just kind of wipe everyone's minds clean or something. Because what I'm hearing is that Gingrich, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm hearing things about Gingrich touting himself as a Washington outsider.
Uh-huh.
And this is the former Speaker of the House and the man behind the 94 Contract with America is passing himself off as a Washington outsider, and people are believing it? That's the only solution that I would have for this. Is like he's got to have a neuralizer on hand to basically wipe everyone's memory from 94 to 98 out and just remind everyone that he was just a school teacher during that time.
Assuming that these people that are voting or being polled have a memory and working brain cells. So they don't need the neutralizer. I've never thought it's possible to tell them what to do. So, and, you know, the Pew Research came out with something, I think it was in July, saying that Republican Party has the only gains they've made are naturally white people, and their poor and young and low-income white voters have shifted to the Republican Party. Isn't that interesting? I'm sure it's shocking as well, but
they're targeting a very narrow, specific demographic, which I think is what happens when a party moves to its ideological extreme. You're going to weed out everyone else that might fit in there. Remember Reagan's Big Ten is the size of a 7-year-old sleeping bag right now.
I think it's not. I mean, to call this an ideological extreme is very kind, because it seems like it's a religion and not a political party anymore. And the very people that Gingrich is getting, these evangelicals, they're the ones that keep falling for, you know, all this, the Sarah Palin, Kane excuse for their own irresponsibility and failures, which is always to blame the devil for coming after them and blame the media. And these people, like George said, do they not have access to the Google? Can they not look up who Newt Gingrich is and what he did? The man was a lobbyist. He's a Washington outsider now? Really?
Go ahead. I'm
the
sorry.
The man single-handedly shut down Congress because he wouldn't get a good seat on Air Force One. That's an outsider.
I think Newt Gingrich fits perfectly into George's evangelicals and the right wing religious voters give their candidates a Jesus get out of free card.
Yeah.
He's the god of gridlock. Why they keep saying Washington's broken, nobody can, you know, get anything done. So yes, bring Newt Gingrich in. Way to get something done. Maybe he'll shut down government again and try to impeach Obama. That would be shocking.
So you guys are not, you two are not overly impressed by the rise of Newt Gingrich. My question for you, Sarah, is will it last? Is Gingrich finally the one who knows how to court primary voters and not implode in 2 days?
Well, you notice that The big debate among liberals is, should they vet Gingrich now? They say this, you know, with a smile on their face, or should they wait? I definitely think they should wait. Let him get the nomination. I don't know if it's going to last, and it really depends on what kind of hits he starts, if he takes any, if people start to remind I don't, you know, how do you get through to that base? Really, they only listen to Fox and Rush Limbaugh, and those folks are behind Newt Gingrich, so it's very possible that it could last. His scandals are old, so God forgave him and he moved on. So I can see the base completely, and maybe even getting behind him because he went after Clinton and shut down government. That's probably exactly what they would like to see happen now. So yeah, I can see that lasting, and I hope it does.
George, is Newt Gingrich's surge simply born out of the fact? Is this the biggest indicator yet of how Republicans really feel about Mitt Romney?
Yes. Yeah, I do believe so. I think that just the fact that, you know, that he dared to make sense in the things that he says, I think that because he is the governor of a liberal state, you know, and you know, just they're basically, you know, the GOP's rules. It's like, once you go blue, screw you. You know, so I am just very, I'm absolutely just like just set on the way that I'm still like kind of figuring out exactly how Gingrich has been able to spin his view in the people's eyes, you know, like the way that he's looked at and everything. But at the same time, it's just like, they're basically saying like, this is the direction we're going. And if you're not going to, jump on board and sound as idiotic as the rest of them, then I'm sorry, we have no place for you here. You know, it's like that tent they have is getting smaller and smaller by the day.
Speaking of idiots, we're into overtime now, George and Sarah, so it's time to have a little fun. Speaking of idiots, Donald Trump. I will give you your choice. You can either talk about Donald Trump hosting a debate or Donald Trump and child labor. Looking at Donald Trump, think it's, just dandy to have 10-year-old kids who aren't getting a good enough education in public schools, putting them to work. Sarah?
Oh, God.
What really, out of this ball of mess, what jumps out of you in that?
Well, where do you start with this guy? I wrote an article the other day, I think it was yesterday, about his use of a prenti. His improper use of a prenti. The man is too lazy to learn the English language, but he has the hubris to come out and say that he can teach poor people to have a work ethic, you know, because the implication is that they don't have a work ethic, and only this man who's still searching for Obama's birth certificate can possibly teach a work ethic to these children. And he doesn't know the English language. I'm just floored. I mean, I was so incensed when I heard that, because I should be upset about the child labor thing, and it does upset me, but I'm just getting so used to hearing these kind of outrageous things, you know, clapping for letting someone die who doesn't have health care. It starts to numb you. So I expect them to go out there and want, you know, next thing it'll be 2-year-olds are lazy citizens and they need to go to work. They're not entitled to food unless they're working. There's so many things wrong with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is, he had an education, but clearly failed to learn a lot. So he had the privilege of an education, yet he comes out the other side thinking, it's not like he doesn't have a TV show called The Apprentice, and he thinks the plural of apprentice is apprenti. I don't, and then now if people are listening to him, he's going to host a debate. The race to the bottom continues. There's no end.
Is Trump a bigger grifter than Herman Cain, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, or anyone else you can think of? Is Trump a grifting force of such expertise that the Republican Party has no idea what's in it?
He's always been a grifter. And how many times has he said he was going to run for president? Is he a bigger grifter? I don't know, because, you know, he's been grifting off of different sectors of the economy, not just the Republican Party for a long time.
I mean,
so I guess it's just what kind of grifter.
Is he at a whole other level than like the Keynes and Palins and Becks of the world when it comes to grifting?
I think they're worse because they're pretending. They spend all their time pretending they're a politician when they're really some kind of warped, trash reality star, reality TV show star that nobody should be listening to. Fine to watch that stuff for amusement, but, you know, don't tell us you're going to run for president. Kim Kardashian for president. Donald Trump is just such an idiot. You know, he's still pushing this birtherism. He actually thinks he has a leg to stand on. The guy must be mentally not all there, not fit. Doesn't have access to Google. He's paranoid.
George, I've given George a little bit of time here. George, where do you want to go with this Donald Trump thing?
I want to go with the reality show part, because this just kind of fits right into the whole mantra of these primaries. Because, like, what better way to show it, to basically show the entire world just how completely warped our culture has become by making a reality show host the moderator of a debate, of a presidential debate. It is sickening. It is absolutely sickening. Like, I'm surprised Fox hasn't countered with bringing in Joe Millionaire to host one. It is.
They will. If we can't. We have, how many debates are left? They still have time. We still have time, George.
There is still time. Yes, you know, we still have a long ways to go. But I mean, it's just become like. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we see like. If you believed Michelle Bachmann, call this 800 number. If you believe Newt Gingrich, call this 800 number. And
yes, put it to the people. Let them decide who gets to the next round.
This is sort of an intellectually paraplegic Dancing with the Stars.
This is, well, you know, like it actually, yeah. Like the one name that comes to mind for me is The Biggest Loser.
Yeah. Oh God, that's perfect. Who can shed the most green bells during this primary season?
It's so insane, like the way that everything is spin spun, and
now,
it's scary. It's absolutely scary to set this up like this.
You know what, George? I think I told you this, Jason, before, but I was asked. I work in TV, and I was asked. I think it was 2.5 years ago now, maybe 3, if I wanted to work on a reality TV show that Republican donor was going to support, where they would go around the country trying to, doing a reality show, finding new Republican candidates for local parties, and they were going to do the race and do the whole thing just like a reality show. And at the time, I was like, wow, this is where they're going, isn't it? I mean, they actually are going to, they're actually doing this. They're just coming out and saying they're going to do this. But it was still hard to believe. And now when I see all this stuff coming out now, it's like, oh my God, they didn't make the actual show, but they just turned the party into the show.
Yes,
and Fox is getting
basically
all the ratings.
It is so like, you know, it has become a full on throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And,
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that, you know, that America is paying more and more attention to what's going on. And the fact that they have such polarizing figures, especially of Donald Trump's ilk, as the centerpiece of this, basically saying, who has made no bones, you know, who has made, had no qualms with saying that he may run himself as an independent. So basically what he's doing is, like, on December 27th, he's going to be sizing up everyone and basically trying to think, like, oh, I can beat that person. You know, basically, and that's, it's absolutely ridiculous that it would go forward like this.
The moderator sizing them up. Oh,
yeah.
It's so perfect.
It's absolutely ridiculous. You're basically, you know, saying that, all right, I don't believe you, but, you know, I'm probably going to run against you. You can be my VP if you want, you know, and just, you know, come on board. You're hired, you know.
So far, Romney, Huntsman, and Paul have all turned down the invitation to appear at this debate.
Because they're the ones that actually seem the most sane.
I don't know. This debate is exactly 1 week before the Iowa caucuses, and I don't know if Mitt Romney's commitment is that strong to not showing up, but he better have another event that night, and it better be big.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got to do something a week before Iowa. But a programming note for Politicus USA readers, I will be ruining my Christmas on December 27th. We will be providing coverage of the Donald Trump debate.
Oh,
and when I say we, I mean me, because let's face it, no one else deserves this kind of torture. I don't know. We might do a live blog. If we don't do a live blog, we will definitely have an immediate wrap-up and full comprehensive coverage the very second this train wreck totally combusts and leaves the airwaves. I actually have the ION network. I know most of America doesn't, so I figure I'm doing a public service and exposing some unintentional hilarity.
I do want to throw in one thing. Last night I was watching the Colbert Report, and it turns out that Stephen was issuing his own debate that was going to take place in South Carolina. And obviously it was part of the show and everything. But I really hope that if they're going to actually take Donald Trump seriously, that they take the Stephen Colbert, the Daily Show audience, seriously as well, because whether the GOP like it or not, you know, the Daily Show Colbert Report audience is pretty informed, and they're pretty, you know, like, I mean, just looking at that rally that they did, that brought in a fair amount of people, right there.
Well,
so
half of the Colbert is a conservative. They don't get that satire.
That's true.
A lot of conservatives.
Studies. The polling shows that somewhere between 30% and 40% of conservatives believe Colbert is an actual conservative.
Wow.
They think he's real.
Stunning. It's stunning, isn't it? But they
it's
should.
Fantastic.
It is.
But yeah, you know, I mean, just thinking about Trump, just as you know, just bringing it back to him. The fact that, you know, this is a candidate that basically said that, you know, that he was not going to run, but if he did run, he would win. So basically now you have, you know, that's going to be something that you're going to hear from a lot of other people as they drop out. Now, I'm sure that's one of the things that Herman Cain is going to wind up saying, you know, if I had run, I would win. And that,
oh, wow,
to me is just like, I mean, it's just sickening, like the way that Trump is basically just kind of manipulating everyone. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's, you know, like, as crazy as he comes off, he's not an idiot, and he knows exactly how to push the right buttons. And he's got the Republican Party literally wrapped around his finger, to even have them consider him moderating this debate is just like, that's just a step right there, just to show you how much the GOP wants to be in the Donald Trump business.
And you can just see the party operatives, Karl Rove and Steve Schmidt, you can just see them cringing from all of this. It's so ironic. I never thought I would be agreeing with Karl Rove on anything. But it's sort of fun to watch the party implode on them. I mean, it's embarrassing, but it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they didn't deserve this.
Well, the
fact that we're supposed to take Donald Trump seriously is just, it's stunning. perform.
It's kind of like the moment where the bad guy is like watching his creation just completely annihilating everything, and you know, having that great moment, just like, what have I done? You know, this is what
you've done, girl.
This is what you've created.
So, Sarah and George, is December 27th, circle the date on the calendar, must-see TV for you? I mean, are people going to tune into this thing for the sheer train wreck factor?
I heard you suggest the live blog, which I know is a suggestion that I will be watching it and live blogging it.
No, that wasn't a suggestion. That was a suggestion if this is as bad as I think it might be, there can be no summary column for this, but this really has to be documented as it happens, as the finest accidents of history sometimes are.
I think half the candidates
have already said no, so this is not going to be a serious debate. But those who are there, I believe, shouldn't be taken seriously, number one. And number two, I believe that there's just no way to sit down and do a serious recap column of this. It's impossible. Donald Trump asked a question about Obama's birth certificate. Donald Trump mispronounced, fill in the blank, the next 300 words. It's just going to be a contest. It's going to be a crazy dance-off is what it's going to be.
Yeah, it is must-see TV.
Yeah.
I hope every American sees it. I hope it gets labeled, this is your modern day Republican Party. Watch it. See if there's anyone here you agree with. See if, you know, what do you think about these people? I would love to see that. Of course, it's playing on some obscure channel that a lot of people don't get, but it's up to people in the media to spread it far and wide.
This debate is such a joke. It literally has the makings of a good joke. Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, and Donald Trump walk into a bar. Now we'll replace walk into a bar with hold a debate.
And then one of them spoke.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the duck said, no, put it on my bill. Punchline.
Oh, my God.
Okay, last thing before we wrap up our overtime and get off the air. George, you wanted to talk about the Defense Authorization Act.
Oh, I'm sorry, say that one more time. It kind of went
back. Defense Authorization Act.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, George, why don't you, this is going to be our 60 seconds with George. Tell us about the Defense Authorization Act, George.
Basically, what we're seeing right here is every fan of dystopian science fiction and everything, like, their worst nightmare has come true. Because one of the things that I've been working on, I've been trying to basically just come up with the rewrites for a story that focuses on the government basically just kind of moving, so, you know, like a bunch of very high impact laws under the public's noses without them knowing it. And one of the things that I was really pushing to put in the story was this act, because I was just thinking, like, well, this couldn't possibly happen, but it did. And that is absolutely scary.
Tell us a little bit about the
so many people
about what
so many people
have
gone through with this.
Tell us a little bit about what the Senate exactly passed.
They're basically saying that America has the right now to hold any citizen or non-citizen or, you know, any citizen in this country prisoner if they are suspected of terrorism, and they don't need probable cause, they don't need you know, evidence of this, they don't need a trial, or, you know, like, they just hold them, and that is just very, very scary. Just like the way that this is all come down, because what you're seeing is you're basically seeing Congress throwing up their hands and saying, "We surrender the people." The people now have one big bullseye on their head. And the fact that this actually happened by the people that we elected really shows you just how out of touch Congress has become. And one major reason why I really think that they need to start thinking about term limits.
in the Senate especially.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is just, you know, this is just amazing the way that this was, that this was able to go through. And it's really, really scary. Just like as an American citizen and everything, I am scared about, you know, like I'm just about, you know, like they can, for all we know, you know, like we, they could track us down from this, you know, it's,
Sarah.
But it's absolutely insane. Like the way that this has gone through. And I really hope that something happens to undo this, because I'm really, really disappointed that this happened.
Do you think Obama will veto this? He's promised a veto. He warned of a veto. Do you think he'll whoop out the veto pen and say, not this time, boys?
Well, from what I understand, this went through with such an overwhelming margin that this could actually override the veto. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, if all the votes would hold for the override, yeah, they would have enough. They need a supermajority to override the veto, which is 66 votes, so
right.
67 votes. So they would have enough, technically, if Democrats voted to override the president. Whether or not Democrats would actually vote to override the president is another story.
Yeah,
you only
and,
have 49
and the
Republicans.
Now that the people are kind of seeing what their choices are regarding the Republicans, I think we're going to wind up seeing Obama's polls go up in the very near future. I also think that we're also going to see some Democrats in the Senate basically saying, "Hey, our guy's not that bad," and they're going to support him, which would hopefully mean that they're going to come around and undo this really, really stupid law.
Sarah, does this give you a big George W. Bush flashback?
It really does, and I'm appalled that the way this country has changed after 9/11, the usage of the term war on terror, which, you know, you can't have a war on an idea, and using that term to justify just about any loss of civil liberty, which is, of course, an irony when they said people are attacking us for our freedom, and who's taking our freedoms away? Our government, in the name of national security. There's always supposed to be, and it is a fine balance between national security and civil liberties, but we have been pushed, you know, this teeter-totter, if you want to look at it that way, is like the national security side is on the ground with all the weight, and civil liberties are up in the air with nothing, or does it work the other way around? But either way, when this first came up, I thought, well, there's no way that this is going to get passed. And then the vote, 93-7. What's interesting is the Tea Party and the left are in many ways, are agreeing on this. The Tea Party members got upset with, I think it was Rubio, and they're coming together to say, you know, you can't take away our freedoms like this. Women, FBI director, defense secretary, Eric Holder, Pentagon general counsel, all of these people are saying there is a danger to over-militarizing our approach. And obviously, when you're talking about detaining American citizens and not even giving, Eric Holder made the point that he would like the opportunity to charge terror suspects in a criminal court. They're just going to remove that option. Everything is being militarized. It's absolutely, this isn't the way this government is supposed to work. And I'm shocked that these people that are supposed to be representing us aren't paying any attention to where the country is. Nobody wants this. You know, we've got these Republicans and then, of course, the Democrats that joined John McCain. You thought John McCain was done assaulting America after his Palin debacle, but no. You have, what is it, I can't stand this guy, South Carolina.
Jim
DeMint. Yes.
Lindsey Graham or Jim DeMint, pick your poison.
Lindsey Graham, but either or. He came out saying this is, America is a battlefield. You know, and I am tired of this, everything is war. America is not a battlefield. I don't want my country referred to that way. A battlefield against whom? Are you, you know, they need to be more specific in their language as well, because what do they say? Is it a battlefield against American citizens? That's what it's starting to sound like. or I shouldn't say starting, it was certainly that way under Bush. I hope that Obama vetoes this, and I hope that Democrats don't vote to override that. He came out very strongly against this. I read the problems he had with these specific amendments, and certainly he made a good case. He is a constitutional lawyer. You would think that that would weigh in with some of these people. But look at who we have, you know, running in the Senate. And, I mean, I've met a lot of these people, and I tell you over and over again, I'm just astounded at sort of their lack of intelligence. And really, what are they doing there? Some of these people are doctors. What does that have anything to do with policy and law? And I'm not saying everyone needs to be a lawyer or has to have, you know, a background in policy, but yeah, I would like to think they were smart enough to read the Constitution and think about what it means and maintain some checks and balances. And instead, ever since 9/11, we've just been on this collision course of, and a lot of times, I was talking to one of my friends last night who's further to the left than I am, and he said, well, it's interesting that, you know, you're against this because I've been kind of, you know, against this for a long time. And I was making the point that I've worked with the military a lot. I've interviewed people there. I've spent a lot of time on base and talking to people, and I don't have the kind of the same view that maybe a lot of liberals have about the military. I've talked to a lot of our troops, and I remember in 2008 when, I can't remember which Naomi said it, that, you know, Bush signed that executive order, and people were thinking maybe we're not going to even have an election. He's going to say that the country's in a state of emergency and we won't have an election.
Naomi Wolf.
And that the military was preparing for this. And I happened to be on base the next day, and I was asking people, you know, would you ever turn on the American people like this, which, because they were doing exercises that had been recorded and used as, you know, and I read that executive order. It certainly did leave that open. But after talking to, you know, everyone, even if they're far, far right, everyone said, you know, they took a pledge to uphold the Constitution. They would not turn on the people like that. And I do believe that to a large extent. I'm not saying bad things can't happen, but I do have faith in the majority of our troops, their allegiance to the Constitution. But that doesn't mean that I want to see something like this, because this is absolutely an abomination of civil liberties.
Okay, guys, it is time to say goodbye for this week. George, do you have anything to promote?
Not at this point. I am just giving my science fiction young adult novel Excelsior a bit of a spit and polish. It is expected to be re-uploaded to Amazon by the beginning of next week. And so if you happen to see it, by all means, check it out. Would love to get more, you know, more looks, more likes, more reviews, more buys, et cetera.
You're gonna go from a top 50 Kindle author to a top 20.
Well, yeah, uh-huh. that's the goal is to stay up there and to move a little higher off. So.
First Kindle, then the New York Times bestseller list, right, George?
There you go. Hey, baby steps, you know.
Okay, Sarah, what if people were gonna read something you've written this week, what should they read?
Probably the story on how the media has helped the Republican Party embarrass us internationally. That would be my one. And I would also like to urge people to go to Move to Amend and see what's going on in their city and how they can be a part of helping to overturn Citizens United.
Okay, guys, as the white stuff continues to fall out the window, we here on Politicus Mountain would like to say good night, good luck, and God bless America. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.